Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about DOMAs. What's DOMA stand for, Mark?
It stands for the Defense of Marriage Act.
Okay. With Mark Levine, partner?
Partner. Sure.
Okay. Handler and Levine, attorneys at law, and they're in Bethesda, they're in Virginia, and where else?
That's it. Pretty much we meet with clients in Bethesda and in Tysons and Alexandria.
How does one contact you?
So by phone, certainly. Our phone number is 301-961-6464, and my extension is 3313. By email, my email address is Mark, M-A-R-C, @ HandlerLevine.com, HandlerLevine.com. Our website's HandlerLevine.com as well. And any of those ways, if you have a question or something, I'd be happy to try and answer it.
Okay. And Mark not only is a practicing attorney, but he's a fellow member of the NITP family, if you will, and does a significant number of retirement seminars, mid-career, small amount, and he does it on estate planning and wills. And what else do you talk about?
We talk about lifetime documents, wills, trusts, estate planning, basically making sure that all of your things are pointing in the right direction, that all of your documents work together and that you've got a plan.
Okay. Well, talking about plans, there's estate planning, and DOMA has an impact on estate planning, and probably this could be three shows, I guess. But bottom line, in a good few minutes, and then we can take it on to the state estate level. We might even talk about some income tax issues with this. So what impact did it have on estate planning?
Well, what's interesting is the case that the Supreme Court reviewed was actually an estate tax case. And it was a situation of a couple who were married in New York. But because DOMA existed to say that for all federal purposes, marriage could only be between a man and a woman, there was a significant federal estate tax that had to be paid. And so the surviving spouse essentially took the case up to the Supreme Court saying that DOMA was unconstitutional. And ultimately, without getting into the intricacies of the decision itself, the impact of the decision was that the portions of the Defense of Marriage Act that essentially said marriage could only be between a man and a woman are unconstitutional. Therefore, all of the federal rules dealing with spouses are upended, and essentially they have to be treated. A spouse in for federal purposes is going to be treated as a man or a woman, regardless of who the other member of the marriage is, for federal purposes. And so for this particular case, what that meant was that the surviving spouse here got a significant estate tax refund because she had paid estate taxes as though she was not married, sued and won the case, and therefore got a refund for what she should not have paid because DOMA should not have applied.
I got a question. How far does it reach back? And this is a somewhat recent court case, but does it go retroactive back 2 years, 5 years?
You know, it's not clear what that is. I know that New York has been refunding some estate taxes that have been paid. Certainly anything that was paid at and around the time of the decision. And I think that a number of states are going to be faced with that, having to review essentially what they have to do with that. And you may have people filing for estate tax refunds. And in all probability, that process is going on right now. And so you have people filing for estate tax refunds and the states processing and deciding what they're going to do. And I have a feeling we're going to hear a lot about that in the next couple of months once the sort of bureaucracy and administrative part of those applications for refund are resolved.
Actually, I was not aware that that was the issue that the case focused on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you mentioned New York gave a refund. And New York, if there's a tough, if you will, fair state to deal with, it's New York.
Mm-hmm.
With taxes.
I mean, the decision was precisely on a New York case. They didn't have a choice. And it's very clear in their case what they're going to have to do. And I think it's probably going to be pretty clear in most states' situations. So if you were in a situation where you paid an estate tax, although you were married to your husband or wife, you want to be looking at whether you're in a position to file for a refund or not.
Wow.
But, you know, the case, although it started in an estate tax arena, has obviously far-reaching reach, essentially. You know, it's not just about estate taxes, although we're going to talk about the estate planning and estate tax impact of DOMA. But, you know, for the federal employee, it has some very immediate impacts, and it has some very urgent things that they may need to be looking at to take advantage of the fact that their marriages may now be recognized for you know, federal employee and employee benefit purposes.
Okay. And when we talk about this, we'll get into states. But this station is one of the most powerful on the AM band. And, you know, I remember at night being able to listen to stations maybe equally powerful, WBZ and Boston, and be able to get it back when they were on AM. So we have our listening audience, certainly the Beltway, if you will. And but we, with the internet, I know we get calls from and questions from California and populous states for feds, Colorado, whatever. There are a bunch of them. I can't remember. I made a list not long ago. So not that we can talk about every state, but we'll talk about some. So, all righty. So now we have Defense of Marital Act, and people that can, couples can now marry, and we scratch the word spouse. So,
so actually what happened, I mean, the Defense of Marriage Act does not create additional rights to marry for anyone. What it says is that for federal purposes, if your marriage is legal in the state where you got married, it's going to be legal as far as the federal government's concerned. So previously, if you were married in Maryland and you were two men or two women, the federal government said that's all well and good for Maryland, but for federal income tax, estate tax, benefits, any federal purpose, you will not be treated as married. And that sort of flew in the face of what the federal government had historically done, which is look at the state law where the people lived or were married. So the most sort of analogous thing to look at is common law marriage. You could not create a common law marriage in Maryland. Doesn't matter how long you live together. Doesn't matter what you call each other. Can't do it. You could create one in North Carolina. And so if you created a common law marriage in North Carolina and moved to Maryland, Maryland took the position you were married because you were married legitimately under the laws of North Carolina, even though you couldn't be married that way in Maryland. The federal government took the same position. A common law marriage created legally and appropriately in North Carolina was a marriage for all federal purposes. It did not matter where you lived at that point. It did not matter that where you lived at that point was not a state where you could create that marriage. What the Defense of Marriage Act did back in 96 was essentially change that and say that it doesn't matter where you were married or what the laws of the state were when you were married. Unless you're a man and a woman married to each other, we will not recognize you for any federal purpose as being married. So it didn't create any new states. It didn't create any new marriages. What it did was take marriages that already existed and now applied all those federal rules to them. So for federal government employees, what that means is that if you were married on, you know, June 25th to someone, a man married to a man, a woman married to a woman in Maryland, your spouse was not eligible for federal benefits. You couldn't get Fegley coverage for them. You could not get, you know, health insurance benefits, long-term care benefits for them or for their children if they weren't also your children. And so June 26th comes around and DOMA goes down and suddenly we're living in a different universe where that marriage that the day before was legal in Maryland or D.C. or New York or California is now still legal but now recognized for federal purposes, for federal benefits purposes. So you're that federal government employee and suddenly you weren't married yesterday as far as your life insurance is concerned, but you are married today. And what does that mean for you? What is it that you now can do, have to deal with? And so there are a number of things. The OPM came out with a memo fairly quickly, I think June 28th, essentially saying, you know, look, you weren't married yesterday for purposes of health insurance, but you're married today. What does that mean? And then July 17th, they came out with a much more expanded memo talking in more specifics. I think that the real crux is for a federal government employee is that you actually are on a timer when it comes to some of these benefits and some of these issues. You had 60 days or have 60 days from June 26th to basically register your marriage, to say to, in regard to your benefits, I'm married, and to claim those benefits. So for Fegley, it actually is a more important deadline because this is a qualifying life event. You can get new insurance. You can get insurance on your spouse, on your children, and you have until August 26th to do that.
That's 2 weeks, huh?
That is 2 weeks. So they gave basically 60 days from the date of the ruling to do that. Now, that's also true. That deadline is also true for health insurance. It's true for long-term care insurance. It's true for dental. It's true basically for all the federal benefits that you have. Now, the difference between some of them is some of them require that qualifying life event and some of them don't. And so for health insurance, you know, when you come around to open season again, you'll have the opportunity, just like you would if your spouse hadn't previously been on your health insurance, to deal with your spouse the same way. But if you want to get them on right now, you have to do that before August 26th.
That brings up an interesting, I don't know that we have the answer in this building. We have somebody that now, a couple that is now married, but for health insurance purposes, the one has XYZ's standard option. And that's what they're going to have until, if they want to change it, open season, which isn't that far away. But I guess there's an increase in the premium. And then, you know, maybe there's children involved.
Sure. I mean, listen, what's happened is people who were used to trying to figure out what does my marriage mean in regard to my federal benefits? The answer now is very clear. It means the exact same thing as everyone else's marriage. It means that you may pay more. You're going to change, you know, what you're covering. So you're going to change what you're charged. And you're now going to have to make the same decisions everyone else has been making. Is it worth it? Is there another option? You know, is there health insurance available for my spouse that's cheaper, you know, from their employer? All of those things, you are now making the same exact decisions everyone else has been making all along. You're just in the same boat as everybody else.
Okay. Can I go back to the common law marriage? The common law doesn't necessarily have to be same sex. Could be, or it could be male-female.
Most of the states where you could create a common law marriage, I'm not aware of any common law marriages created between a same sex couple, although I would guess if you can create that same sex, if you can create a common law marriage in that state, you can do it now as a same sex couple.
Okay, but were there legal requirements for the common law marriages prior to all this? I mean, did you have to go someplace and say, this is what I have? Or was it, or you just kind of grandfathered in there because you lived together for a period of time?
So in general, without going into, and different states are different, but basically you had to hold yourself out as married. So it was not enough to simply say, oh, well, we spent a night in Pennsylvania or North Carolina or whatever states there were that had common law marriage, and therefore we're married now because we spent a night together in a hotel. You had to hold yourself out as man and wife. You had to basically treat yourselves as though you were married in addition to being together and being in that relationship. So what that meant was, for example, and these are different things if you look at the different cases that have been looked at, did you, when you filled out forms, identify yourself as married? Did you introduce this person as your spouse? So for federal government purposes, you know, you put that person on as your spouse and you're going to identify, if it's ever asked for a marriage certificate, you're going to identify the common law marriage as creating it. But that's, you have to treat yourself as married to be married.
Okay.
It's not just something that happens because of the, at least as far as I know of in the states that, and the situations I've dealt with, it's not just enough to live together. That
so in the 70s and 80s, living together didn't create a marital bond. Huh?
It did not. That did not create a common law marriage. That's right.
All right. I just kind of remember that from the past. Somebody talking about they'd be subject to the...
I think that's it's a common misperception. I think there's a lot of people who think, oh, you know, we live together, therefore, you know, are we married? And I get that question a lot. There are a lot of people who say, well, you know, we lived together for X number of years in D.C. Doesn't that mean we're married? And, you know, again, it comes down to those questions of, well, how did you hold yourselves out? And I've had several couples who their kids thought they were married. In other words, they, you know, it's a second marriage for both of them. And as far as their kids knew, they were married, and their kids were actually all surprised when they said, we're actually going to go ahead and get married, because they had called each other husband and wife and they had held each other out as married and had done all of those things. And as far as everyone knew, they were married. And it was a surprise to everyone that they weren't.
Wow. Now, are they just grandfathered in under this change in the law under DOMA?
Well, again, if they were, again, in order to create it, so I don't think from DOMA's point of view, you'd have to go back and look and see, was that marriage a legal common law marriage in the state where it was created? And if it was, then yeah, I would think from DOMA's point of view, if they're going to treat a common law marriage between a man and a woman as a marriage, they're going to treat a common law marriage between a man and a man or a woman as being married.
Okay.
So I think that's pretty much the same, going to be treated the same.
Okay. Now we got open season coming up with the health insurance. You brought up that they would be covered under the health insurance. What other federal bennies? I believe that OPM memo had like three, maybe four, one of which was health insurance. Did it talk about the annuity? Some people call it a pension. Some call it annuity. This is not the thrift. This is the years in service and highest compensation annuity.
So you know what? The memo did not cover that, except that if it did cover, I think it was the earlier memo, that covered basically letting OPM know that you are married. And so you have 2 years from the date of the decision till June 26th, 2015, I think, basically say that you have a marriage and be able to take advantage of those sort of after retirement marriage issues. I think for anyone who is still working, their marriage is going to be treated like anyone else's marriage. And so where before, you know, we would do estate planning with couples, same-sex couples, and that was a big issue. You were going to basically lose the benefit of that survivor annuity at the first death. Now they have the opportunity to choose a survivor benefit just like anybody else would. So what we used to do a lot is look at the insurable interest annuities and things like that in those for those couples. Now they're just going to do the same decision making. Am I going to do, you know, the full annuity? Am I going to do the survivor annuity? For those people, it's exactly the same. And for people who've already retired, essentially, they get to treat this as a new marriage and report that and make that decision about whether they're going to have the survivor or the self only.
Well, I got a head scratcher that I don't expect an answer. Somebody under DOMA, they become a married couple. They had lived together a certain number of years, but they had not lived the entire time that the one spouse had worked for the federal government. After this, they divorce. Now, in divorce, the non-fed spouse has a right to the annuity based on not the easiest calculation, but picture that one. I don't want to try to figure that one out.
There's no question. Someone, you know, will absolutely, unquestionably, this will happen. That someone who was married in a state, you know, earlier on, and I forget the first year that there was a state where you could get married, but someone's going to, you know, come up with that situation where, you know, they're going to say, look, we were married under the laws of the state of whatever the first law was, and we're now divorced, and we were married for that entire period of time, and I want that calculation based on pre, you know, June 26th, 2013, not just from June 2013 going forward. And that will absolutely be a lawsuit somewhere. If it's not already,
yeah.
Because the calculation there, they're going to have to decide how is it we're going to do that calculation. And that's going to start on the state courts. In other words, there's going to be a state court because they're doing the divorces and they're the ones who are figuring out the percentages. And that's probably already started.
Years ago, I was a professional witness to determine what the value of the federal pension was. And I stopped the day both attorneys attacked me, both sides. What am I doing here? And the judge was very good. They stopped and he said, you two sit down. I'll ask the questions. And then they told me to go.
Yeah. I mean, so I was just looking real quick. So I think it goes back to 2008, I think might have been the first state to allow that. So you're going to have people who are already married 5 years. So there's 5 years of government service that the person getting the divorce is going to want. And I'm sure that that's happening out there. So, you know, the federal benefits stuff, if you're a federal government employee and you are, you know, have a husband or a wife, you it's really behooves you at this point to sit down and look at these memos and look at and talk to your human resources and figure out what changes should you be making to your, you know, your benefits to make sure you're including it. The other big issue is that the children of that spouse who were not your stepchildren for purposes of federal government benefits the day before on June 25th are now your stepchildren. So your spouse's children, there may be some coverage issues for them as well.
Well, how about this is very interesting to me, and I'm glad you're here to explain it in English to the listening group and me and Andrew. Right, Andrew? Not anyway. So what else would one look for? I mean, we're here to talk about estate planning as well. Are there certain estate documents that we have to throw out and redo our estate documents?
Absolutely. I mean, there was a whole, or there is, and there's going to continue to be for a period of time, you know, a whole subset of estate planning for same-sex couples. Because the federal benefits were different, you know, and the federal treatment of estate taxes was different, we really had to look at different estate planning tools. There's a lot more insurance that you might look at because there are ways to pass that without it going into the person's estate and being able to go to their spouse, not having to be subject to estate taxes. Now, the bigger challenge is that we've got a set of states where you can be married and you'll be treated as married, and a set of states where you won't be. And what's going to happen if you move? Because, you know, states, even the states that have banned same-sex marriage have done it differently. Some of them have banned it, you know, being created in their state. Some of them have banned it, recognizing it from another state. Some of them have gone as far, and this is just Virginia and Michigan, to say that not only, you know, do we not recognize it, you can't create it, you can't have a civil union, you can't even have a domestic partnership agreement where you're trying to create a contractual relationship that looks like marriage. And so we've already had some of these issues where someone gets married and moves to a state like Virginia and you have a divorce proceeding or you have custody proceedings that go on. And how do you deal with that? And so, again, for same-sex couples, same-sex married couples now, you are looking at your estate planning very much based on where you live. So if you live in a state that recognizes it, that's great. And we're going to change your planning. You know, we would go to great lengths to invest the partner at that point with all of the benefits of a married person. Now you can simply treat them as you would any other married couple because they're going to have those rights based on their relationship, based on the fact that they're a spouse. So where you live becomes incredibly important if you are in a same-sex relationship. And even if you're married, to the extent to which that marriage is going to be truly respected and dealt with. So I think there's going to be a big difference now if you're a federal government employee looking where you're going to live or where you're going to retire. You really want to take a very close look at what the laws are in the state where you're going to. And if you're going from a state like Maryland or New York that has, allows anyone to get married, and you move to a state that has sort of moved to specifically ban it, like Virginia, for example, your rights may change. Your documents are certainly going to change in terms of how do we deal with that. The big issue, and it doesn't come up, as far as I can tell, it only comes up in two states, are states where you have a estate tax separate from the federal tax and you have a same-sex marriage ban. And so as far as I could, just looking at it quickly this morning, Oregon and North Carolina have same-sex marriage bans, and they have a separate state-level estate tax. That could create some significant issues for couples if you were to retire to one of those states and have a estate tax that's going to go above that state-level estate tax. So you really have to pay a lot of attention to where am I going because you may know what the laws are where you are. You don't necessarily know what they are where you're going.
That's interesting. All righty, the folks listening, we're going to open up the phones now, but the call should be on the subject, benefit questions, Social Security questions as it relates to this. Okay. But in general, no voluntary contribution on Roth transfers, no health issues, no. But just on this, I don't mean to cut it off, but this is so unifocused. And sometimes we can spend a lot of time on the phone, which we don't, we don't mind. But today ought to be on this because I'm not so sure there's a lot of shows like this.
All that stuff's above my pay grade. So that's, they won't get as good of answers on that.
Okay, so let's come on back then to estate documents. And you mentioned life insurance. Life insurance is non-taxable generally if you do your planning right, both at the federal and the state. But it could be if you don't do planning. But to have a federal estate, you have to have an awful lot of assets. But with a joint situation, you might have more assets than what you had before.
Sure. I mean, I think if you're a married couple at all, I mean, what we always tell clients is you never look at what the estate tax would be at the first death. You always look at the second death. And that was not true necessarily for same-sex marriages prior to that. We had to look at both the first and the second marriage. And there are a number of issues related to estate taxes, gifting. You're allowed unlimited gifts to your U.S. citizen spouse. You're not allowed unlimited gifts to your U.S. citizen spouse before June 26th if they were same sex as you. And so there are a lot of things in the estate planning part of it, including life insurance, including how you're going to structure gifting or how you have to report gifting. In other words, there's been people who have reported taxable gifts, essentially.
That have to amend the return?
That may be able to amend the return. In other words, if you give your partner from the from IRS's point of view $100,000, but they were really your spouse because you were married in New York, that is not something that should have been reportable. You shouldn't have had to report it. It shouldn't be kept track of. And so you may be able to amend a return, and you're going to have to look at that depending on when you did it. So, life insurance is one of those things that when we talk about it's not taxable. It's not taxable for income tax purposes. It's absolutely includable in your estate for estate tax purposes. And so you have to look at that number when you're looking at everything. Most of us don't have a federal estate tax problem. The federal estate tax is a quote-unquote permanent estate tax now. And obviously what that means is there's no law on the books right now to change it. Doesn't mean Congress can't change it tomorrow. They can. But it's $5.25 million and going up every year until they change the law itself. So for most of us, $5.25 million is more than we're going to have when we die. If you're married, there's something called portability now. So if regardless of whether it's an opposite sex or same sex marriage, you and your spouse can actually protect up to $10.25 million with not a lot of planning. And you can protect a lot more than that doing planning. It's an opportunity if you've done your planning prior to this, you really want to sit down and look at that again because there may be things that are no longer necessary. There may be things that are much easier. And certainly I've had that conversation with a number of clients saying, look, at this point, all these machinations that we went through, all these hoops we would jump through, we don't have to do that anymore. We can just go back to having much more straightforward estate planning, the same as we do for your neighbors and your siblings and everybody else. And so for those people, it's a real opportunity to simplify their estate planning.
Okay. And if you want to talk to the man that can make complex simple, give us a call, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. And we're talking with Mark Levine, partner, handler, and Levine, focus on estate planning. Is that fair to say?
That's everything we do, estate planning, probate, trust, and estates.
Okay. And with offices in Maryland and Virginia, but we'll take emails or calls from wherever you might be.
Give those answers a shot. I think, we've often, and it still is going to apply to a lot of people, DOMA was a huge change for people in states where you can get married. In states where you can't, it doesn't change a lot of the planning you have to do. In other words, when I talk about hoops and machinations, you've got to spend a lot more time on powers of attorney and on healthcare directives and on your wills and on your beneficiary designations, making sure that your relationship with this person who you're not allowed to marry because you live in a state that doesn't allow that, is dealt with properly. And it's harder, and it takes more detail, and it takes more work. And for people in those situations, you have to make sure you sit down with someone who understands that that takes more work, because not everyone does. You know, it's from the law's point of view in those states, it's two strangers sitting down to do estate planning with each other, or sitting down to make each other their healthcare agent or their financial or legal agent. And legally, you're strangers. Legally, your children are not don't have any relationship to the other partner in that relationship. And so you really have to take very careful steps to, by contract, by documents, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, wills, revocable trusts, create those relationships legally that the state that you live in doesn't allow. And so although DOMA's a great thing for simplifying estate planning and estate tax planning and benefits, it does not solve that problem for a lot of clients and for a lot of people and a lot of federal government employees living throughout the country because their states don't recognize that relationship.
Okay, and you mentioned a few minutes ago that forethought should go into this. Let's say somebody's not married. Do they want to be covered under this? I would imagine for benefits, the answer is yes. But for other things, I'll just come to my side of life, income taxes. If two people prior to this filed single tax returns because they weren't married, and roughly the income is the same for each, the taxes would be lower on two single returns than a joint return. On a joint return. It's called the marriage penalty. As that gap widens, in other words, one makes much more than the other one, then the marriage... I don't think you get married for income taxes, so please don't anybody assume that. I'm not that much of an accountant. But there are things to be weighed, that being one of them, not the major one, but some of the other things Mark mentioned would go into the basket of, gee, what ifs.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something I've wondered about, you know, the income tax impact and the changes and the differences between the state and federal part of that. In other words, if you live in New York, the state and federal are going to be the same. You're married for both. But if you live in a state that does not recognize your marriage, what's the impact of that for your income tax filing?
Well, many states, not all, have kind of a joint calculation if you're married, and you can split them off and do married filing separately, which doesn't have the same ugly tax rate that the federal does. And the states usually don't jack the rates up, but the feds, they do go up significantly if you do married filing separately. So married filing separately in a state that would not recognize the marriage probably isn't going to result in a much higher tax at the state level. So that might be one good thing.
Sure. That
or
that's
okay. Might clear up one thing.
I assumed it was more complicated, so that's...
It's actually, a lot of states are a number of them, it's actually done in two columns, you know, one spouse versus the other one, and then they calculate up the tax, and then they add it together, and that's the tax. Or if they want to do it combined, there's a third column. So whatever gives them the best deal, that's the one they take. If it's a state where you actually have to file two separate tax returns, a little bit of a pain in the neck, but not real hard. Or you have spouses now, one of them lives in this state, another one lives in the other state. They actually live in the other state. And then you do the return jointly, and then you have to split the state returns. But it really doesn't cost them any more in tax. Because they're married filing separately because they don't live in the state. So the one state doesn't have the right, and I think of it around here, tax rates other than Virginia are pretty high. So the spouse that lives outside of Maryland and Virginia, say, I can think of one in North Carolina. North Carolina tax rates are lower, not by a ton, but they're lower. And the one spouse here makes a lot more money. And every year we have to do joint, and then we have to split it out, you know, on a computer. It's pesky.
So it sort of was the exact opposite when Maryland, for example, passed the Same-Sex Marriage Act. The Maryland estate tax was based on the federal rules. And so while the Maryland inheritance tax, because Maryland has both an inheritance tax and an estate tax, the Maryland inheritance tax was basically taken care of by that. In other words, previously, same-sex couples could not take advantage of the exemptions for the inheritance tax by being married. Now they can, but for estate tax purposes, it was seemed pretty clear that the Maryland statute was set up in such a way that it depended on the federal definitions. And so even though you could be married legally in Maryland, you may still be subject to the federal estate tax, to the Maryland estate tax, even though you were married. DOMA takes care of that. DOMA changes the federal definitions. Therefore, the states that rely on the federal definitions for determining their tax, it's going to change that as well. And so some of the states, and there aren't many, but a couple states may have their own, like I said, estate taxes, but ban the same-sex marriage in their state, it could come up with an interesting conundrum depending on how their law is written. Because if they take the federal definition, it's going to affect it for their purposes as well.
Okay, I don't want to get too far into the tax weeds, but you might get a kick out of this. I don't care where anyone lives under the new law, old law, married, and they live in a particular state, but they might own a piece of land in another state. They might own a second residence. They might have inherited a piece of ground or a house. So it doesn't have to be exotic, you know, on the beach, gazillion dollars. It could be anything. Don't you have to file an estate tax return for that state?
You absolutely do. If you live, you know, again, I'll take what I'm the most familiar with in this area. Virginia does not have a state level estate tax. And I think about 30 of the states do not, about 20 do, about 30 do not. So it's more common to live in a state that does not have a state level estate tax than has one. If you live in Virginia, but have a piece of real estate in Maryland, that piece of real estate will drag you into the Maryland estate tax scheme. And what a lot of people have a misconception about is they say, well, the Maryland exemption level is $1 million. My piece of property is a condo at the beach. It's worth $268,000. It's not worth $1 million. Therefore, I am not going to have to file a Maryland estate tax return because I don't have $1 million in Maryland. And that's not how any of these states look at it. All of the states figure out first, if you lived in my state, would you have to pay an estate tax? So do you have more than $1 million total? So if you have $2 million total living in Virginia, meaning life insurance, TSP, other stocks and bonds, the value of your house in Virginia, the value of that property in Maryland, if that's $2 million, let's say, and the value of the property in Maryland is $500,000, they're going to figure out that, okay, if you lived in Maryland, you would owe the state of Maryland $100,000. But because 75% of your assets are outside of Maryland and you live outside of Maryland, we're going to only charge you 25% of that tax.
What a deal.
So you're going to have to pay a $25,000 tax rather than a $100,000 tax for the privilege of having that piece of property in Maryland. That will, you know, have issues in regard to same-sex couples as well, because, again, what's available for an exemption in one state may not be available for an exemption in another state. Every state exempts estate taxes for spouses, or at least U.S. citizen spouses. Whether or not, you know, depending on where that piece of property is and if there's an estate tax there. And again, there are very few states that actually actively ban same-sex marriage that have an estate tax. But if you happen to be in one of those situations, you could have that as an issue.
Okay. I'm sure you have no clients like this, but I know some of the people listening, the wheels are turning, and they're saying, it's worth $250,000. It's worth X dollars. I'm just not going to file the return. How would anyone know? And the answer is when you go to transfer the title.
Yeah, although not every state treats that the same as well. You know, many states require a certificate of you know, that you filed the estate tax or that you filed all the taxes due. Some don't. So, for example, if all you had was a $250,000 piece of property in Maryland, doesn't necessarily mean you have to file an estate tax return. In other words, if your total estate was only $750,000, $250,000 of which was in Maryland, you're not required to file an estate tax return. You can negotiate that property and sell it, and you don't ever have to file anything. And so some states will follow up on it, some states won't, and the enforcement of that isn't clear. What is clear is that at some point in that process, you're going to sign something under the penalty of perjury saying that it's free and clear of all taxes and liens and things like that. And if you have neglected to file that estate tax return and pay that estate tax return, you're committing perjury. And I have some clients who look at that and say, well, that's unacceptable. Then obviously we're going to do it the right way. And I've had other clients who say, well, that's not really perjury. You know, I'm just not telling them, but I'm not, you know, it's perjury. At some point or another, you're going to sign something that say all the taxes are paid, that there are no other liens you're aware of on the property, et cetera, when you go to settlement or something like that. And so, you know, there are clients who I am sure have had no problem with that. And many, many more clients who look at that and say, well, then that's my answer. You know, I'm going to have to file it. I'm going to have to take care of it.
Yeah. Potato, potato. It's whatever.
I have some clients who view perjury as potato, potato, I'm sure. But again, most of my clients, that's pretty persuasive in terms of you know, what they're going to do.
That's a powerful word.
It is. And, you know, I'll say this. It's more powerful when it comes to real estate than it comes to, you know, a lamp in mom's house. I have many more clients who are willing to say, well, you know, maybe we're not going to report that lamp. I have never had a client that has said, we're not going to report that piece of property, at least that they've told me about.
But of course.
Right.
And you schooled them in advance so that they wouldn't be thinking like that.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark is an outstanding estate attorney, but has high ethics and can make somebody think differently than what they did before they walked in the office, I would say.
You know, I think for a lot of clients, it's once you explain, these are the rules. I mean, we get this question a lot in class when we talk about gifts. You know, if you give somebody $15,000 in a year, you're required to report that. You're required to tell IRS. And I have a lot of clients say, well, how does IRS know I gave them $15,000? They don't know that. You know, I hand somebody a $15,000 check. I give them $15,000 in cash. I give them a car. I pay their bills for $15,000. How does IRS know? And my answer is, well, IRS knows because you're required to tell them. The law says you have to tell them if you made a gift in excess of this amount of money. And I'm sure there are some clients who that has no impact on at all. But for many clients, it's very impactful because they can't imagine, especially a lot of the clients who work for the government, you know, that they're not going to follow the rules and cross the T's and dot the I's.
Okay. I think we really dug into the states and not only on the subject of the show, but just for anybody listening. You have estate issues where you might not think that you do, and we touched on some taxes. What other documents should they be looking at? We got the will, if you will. What about adult children? We're going to have a whole show on that, but not to put you on the spot there, but how does this impact that? In other words, the adult child of whichever one of the two was there, now it's a child of the union.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are two parts to that. And the one that's more common is that I have parents who have children who, you know, are either going to get married now because they can, a same-sex couple, or have already gotten married. And, you know, again, that brings up the specter of divorce. You know, one of the most common misconceptions that people have is that if you leave money to a child, it's, you know, available to their spouse automatically, or that if that spouse has debts, your child is responsible for the debts. Whether, regardless of their relationship, you know, your inheritance is not marital property. If you inherit money, it is not the spouse's money automatically. I have a lot of clients who sort of want to make sure that the money's not going to end up with the spouse of their child, regardless of who that spouse is. The most natural, I don't know if it's natural, certainly the most ordinary plan that people have is that if I die, my money goes to my kids. If they're not there, it goes to their kids. It doesn't go to their spouse. Spouses certainly have more rights than partners did. And so if you had children who were not married to their partner because they couldn't and now can, you certainly have to be aware of the fact that, you know, having now a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law is different than simply having your son or daughter's partner in the relationship. In a divorce, if they mix the money, if they do certain things with it, that other daughter-in-law or son-in-law certainly has more rights than the partner did. And so that's something that you want to think about as well. So it's not just you can get married or you know, when you couldn't, but you're looking at your children now too. It also may create different issues for who your grandchildren are, whether or not they're stepchildren or not, and what, you know, impact that may have in terms of the planning as well. So it is a multi-generational thing. We have a lot of clients with kids who now can marry their partner and couldn't. And what does that mean for their planning as well?
All right. You've dispensed an awful lot of knowledge here. How does one contact you?
So by phone, certainly. Our phone number is 301-961-6464, and my extension is 3313. By email, my email address is Mark, M-A-R-C, at handlerlevine.com, H-A-N-D-L-E-R-L-E-V-I-N-E.com. Our website's handlerlevine.com as well. And any of those ways, if you have a question or something, I'd be happy to try and answer it.
Yes, and both are equally knowledgeable. Is that a fair statement?
Each of
the handler and the Levine.
Oh, Norman, so. Sure. My partner, we've been partners, worked together for 20 years now. So I know more, although he is better looking.
So. I like that. I've known Norm 30 years. Got me out of a scrape years ago. Not legally. It's just a bad business decision. And he handled the settlement like the perfect orchestra leader when the people were not playing in tune. Anyway, what should we dig into next?
I think, you know, the thing that you said at the beginning, you know, just, and I think we talk about this a lot, but what do you need? What is estate planning? What should you be doing? And what you should walk out with, you know, and what makes sense to do. I you know, the one question I get in almost every single seminar that I do is, why shouldn't I just do this on the computer? What's the difference between what, you know, you do and just calling, you know, or going to www whatever. And, you know, what I'll say with that, and I think it's something that people need to think about, is you get what you pay for. It's not going to surprise anyone to learn that I think you better get a better product from meeting with an attorney than from dealing with sort of the questions on a website. I think that an attorney who does this kind of work on a regular basis knows the questions to ask you. And I think that there are a lot of questions to ask. There are questions about the relationships between you and your family, the questions about relationships between the people who are going to be in charge and your family. And this actually comes up a lot in same-sex relationships because family members aren't always as understanding of those relationships. And we find a lot of those times that people are very specific about who they want and what rights they want other people to have if they're incompetent or at their death. And so doing planning for same-sex couples, whether they're married or not, often includes a lot more questioning about what are the feelings that your family has about the relationship you're in. And I'd say over the last 20 years, that's changed dramatically. You know, the number of cases earlier in my career where people would say, well, we have to make sure we cut my family out. They can't be involved. I don't even want them to know about it because they're not friendly to my relationship. I'd say, you know, in the last 10 years, the number of times that comes up has gone down dramatically. But it's still something you need to think about. I have clients in every kind of relationship who don't get along with children from first marriages or don't get along with siblings. But I think it's something that you have to think about more in the same-sex relationship sometimes. Computer programs, books aren't going to ask you questions about that.
That's what I wanted to say. I'm not making this up. On the way down, I had a conversation with a gentleman that was going to start a business, and should I go to buy this package and set up the organizational? And I said, no. Well, I'll have to pay. And I said, well, that's why you go there, but go to an attorney that knows business. And there's a reason that they know business, because they studied it. They've been through every kind of machination, probably. This was a simple, small business. And you don't want to miss the one paragraph that'll open the door for you to be hurt. And same thing on the accounting side. I have a great software product. There's nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't answer my questions. But somebody in the office hopefully does. And in a
world. Well, more than that, it doesn't ask you all the questions necessarily. I mean, that's the bigger thing I find, is that they aren't asking enough questions. They can't, because when you sit down with somebody and talk to them about their lives and their family and their kids, every single one of them is different. That's what makes the job fun, is that you sit down and talk to people and you're able to answer questions, because you know what? This person with three kids has an entirely different family than that person with three kids. And their relationships with the in-laws and the grandchildren and all of that may be completely different. And you have to ask those questions about the different relationships in order to figure out who should be in charge. And more than that, it's easy to get power to people. It's easy to name someone as a power of attorney or an executor or a trustee. What's hard is to manage what happens next. What's hard is how does that person get along with everybody afterwards without it getting to litigation and involving lawyers and going to court. And that's the hard part that I think an attorney helps with far more than any program can.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure you'd agree with this. When you meet with your clients, it's not only in an interview, but it's, well, what ifs? And I find out more with the what ifs than if I just did it over the phone. I talk to most of them on the phone. They all don't come in, but you challenge them, and then you see something there, and you say, okay, what about this? Or if they're sitting there, I never thought about that. Yeah, I have that. Anyway,
a client of mine named it. We were talking about all of the what ifs, and they just looked at me, and I've used this line ever since. I love it. They said, "You just spend your life dealing with morbid improbabilities, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yes, that's exactly what I do. I spend my life dealing with morbid improbabilities." If you only plan for what happens if they all die at 85, that's easy. But that isn't how we're all going to go, unfortunately.
Okay, we have one more minute before we have to go off air. And I think your final comment, I know what it's going to be, but
well,
I got to ask it.
Go talk to someone, especially if you are in a situation where, it's a same-sex marriage. Go talk to your human resources person about your benefits issues, because, again, you've got 2 weeks for some of these things to deal with, possibly forever. So you really want to make sure that you take the time, go talk, look it up. Go talk to an attorney, do estate planning.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks
for listening, Norm. Thanks for not calling, Norm. Anyway, it's been great. See you all next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.